Coming up on American Parlor Songbook, we'll get crooked on this episode about crime.
You know, Julia, I'll bet you I'd make a really good criminal.
No, I don't think you would.
Why is that?
Because you're a chicken.
Oh, okay. So I'm a chicken, and I sneak up on those other dumb birds, and I'm like, hey, I'm
no,
reaching
near the nest. What I mean is that you're not brave enough.
Well, maybe, but I make up for it with a lack of empathy.
That's true.
What's that? I'm sorry. I can only hear my own voice.
No, I was agreeing that you have the lack of empathy.
That's it, smarty. Keep talking while I slip into your purse and get that ATM card out. And
okay, we share an account, dummy.
And that's why it's the perfect crime. I can't even be prosecuted for it.
Right, because you'd be stealing your own money.
And that dummy wouldn't even know what hit him.
But that's you.
Who?
The dummy.
Well, I'm quite certain that a dummy couldn't come up with a scheme this rich.
You're right. You do it. Just steal me some milk on that card while you're at it.
Ooh, how about some shoes?
Size 7. From the Tudor House Theater in Lake Arrowhead, California, this is American Parlor Songbook with your host at the piano, J.P. Houston!
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Now, on the other microphone, faithfully upholding her spousal privilege in a litany of cases, my wife, Julie Van Dusen. Crime, it doesn't pay. Actually, I think it pays, what, $4.73 a day. You get to make license plates, though. Time in the yard, showers with beefy men. If you bury the loot well enough, though, it'll be there when you get out. If you get away with it in the first place, it's like it never happened. You know, like if a tree falls in the forest sort of thing. Like, if a tree falls on Jimmy Hoffa and no stoolies are around, does anybody squeal? No. Probably Jimmy Hoffa. If you bend the rules, gingerly lead the blind, subtly pull the wool, it ain't a crime to get my of gravy trains, salad days on a plate, crooked's better than straight. Maybe. Oh, wait. You've got your petty, you've got your sneaky, your destructive, you've got your plain old dumb. Did you see this couple in Ohio this summer? This is true. They got away scot-free with a big bag of green bank money, out the door, all the way home, not a siren in sight. But what do you think they do? They fire up Facebook and they post money all over their wall, you know, waving big stacks of it, making it rain on each other. Benjamin Franklin origami. Yo, look at all this money we stole. Bend of the rules, gingerly lead the blind, subtly pull the wool. It ain't a crime to get mine, baby. Boatloads of gravy trays, on the plate, like crooked's better than straight. Maybe. Misdemeanors can be fun, right? Chuck an egg or two when they deserve it. Or maybe speed a little on the way home from work. A friend of mine, he taught me a great trick for that, for speeding. Well, what you do is you lay back just around the limit, and well, you wait for your mark, and there he goes. The first maniac to barrel past you is your man. You hit the gas, and you keep up with him. You know, what's going to happen is he's going to draw the heat like a big radar shield. You just slow down at the last minute, pass him, and say, hello, officer, as he's getting his ticket. I thought, well, hey, maybe this is a catch-all, you know, a scheme that will work in general for all crimes. So I casually strolled around the grocery store one day, and I waited for a crazy old lady to start stuffing onions in her skirt. A geriatric shield, tiptoeing one step just behind her, perfectly mirror-synchronized, sneak fingers right in her shadow. Everything she gets, I get, all the way out the door through those scanners there. And, that's where the bit breaks down. You see, I was actually her stooge all along. She beeps, and I'm left standing in the scanner when the guard looks up. Yes, Your Honor. A pair of leotards and an Engelbert Humperdinck helmet.
Bend the rules, gingerly lead the blind, subtly pull the wool. It ain't a crime to get mine, baby. Boatloads of gravy trains, salad days on a plate. Crooked's better than straight.
Maybe. Wait. Murder. the reddest of all crimes. Maybe after Tomato Heist. You can't really come back from the Big M, though. Once you've crossed over that dark divide, life itself becomes a prison. Even if they don't catch you, you get that telltale heart beating under the floorboard. Boom, 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 boom. You know, guilt. I couldn't take that kind of guilt, no matter how annoying Carrot Top got. I once turned myself in for stepping on a bug. I said, "Officer, you have to lock me up. I killed an ant." He said, "On your mother's side?" I said, "One of her sides, I guess." He said, "Gertrude?" I said, "I don't know. Could have been. I didn't even know they gave those things names." He says, "Cold, kid." I said, "No, not really. This is flannel." He says, "Gertrude McIntyre?" "Sure, maybe. I don't know." He said, "Well, we'll let this one slide. Gertrude McIntyre was a real son of a..." But if you bend the rules, gingerly lead the blind, subtly pull the wool, it ain't a crime to get mild, baby. Boatloads of gravy trains and salad days on a plane, and crooked's better than straight. Maybe. Wait. You know, there are all kinds of crimes that, well, they aren't really crimes at all, really. Just a bunch of too many rules meant to be broken. We've all parked where we shouldn't have, and we've built a little shed without a permit, and, well, probably near 100% of us have smoked something they could lock us up for. Well, and they sure like locking them up in America, you know. They say 1 in 4 have a record now. 1 in 4 have a record. It's gotten so you can't even have a little fun anymore. It's gotten so you can't even make a little mistake anymore. Something, 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 the quality of mercy is not strained. You can't wait around for Shakespeare's big speech. You just gotta not get caught in the first place, or at least make a break for Uruguay if it's your third strike. Don't tell anybody, but we're gonna see what kind of crimes we can get away with on the program here today. We've got a great band from Los Angeles, the Bastards of Belleville, are here. Back on the program, our old friend here for the first time with her father, April, and Chickster Shankman are stopping by. Stick around, it's gonna be felonious. If you bend the rules, gingerly lead the blind, subtly pull the wool, it ain't a crime to get mine, baby. Boatloads of gravy trains and salad days on the plate. Crooked's better than straight. I said crooked's better than straight. Why, crooked's better than straight.
The mugshot newspaper business is booming across America, with the tabloids accused of extortion through their mugshot removal services. Here to extort jeers with criminally bad melodies, J.P. Houston sings the news.
After a long court battle and 100 years of profiteering, the song Happy Birthday to You is at long last in the public domain, which means any of us can sing it at will, royalty-free. That's something that should happen to all songs or stories or movies eventually, right? Warner Chappell Publishing, it seems, had falsely claimed ownership of the song and has been collecting royalties on everything from theme restaurants, sing-alongs, and movie soundtracks. And, well, it turns out they never really owned the song in the first place. And it's all sort of related to some bigger copyright issues that threaten to hinder culture by rewriting the laws to suit the bigwigs. Copyright in perpetuity for the great-grandchildren's great-grandchildren of the corporation who bought the rights from the songwriter's great-grandchildren. Here's a song about that.
So now here I sit, having hummed a tune by a candle in the closet of my room. For if I stepped out, humming it aloud, to a troubled life of debt, I would be doomed. Come the big wig pigs with their jack-leg twits, waving letters claiming suit if I persist. Tisk, tisk, but the gavel rang and the whole world sang. Warner Chappell, cease and desist upon this. Da 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 music comes along, a simple song for all the throng to jig and chirp to. Then the song they sing becomes a thing that they can sling and put to work to. Once upon a time, the change would jingle for a while, they'd get their just due. But then came someone sunny, making bon or moolah better for the mouse crew.
That's fair use there. That's parody or satire or something.
Though it's a small vic in the bigger pic, it's cathartic to cut loose and let it slip. So it blows my shot for a contract spot. I'm gonna sing it, let them burn and bridges rip. Happy birthday. Happy birthday you. Happy birthday, you want a chapel. Happy birthday to you.
Our musical guests tonight are a great band out of Los Angeles, California, here for the first time on the program. How about a little gypsy jazz from the Bastards of Belleville? American Parlor Songbook is now available on PRX, and we're excited to be adding some new stations this season. Well, we're always looking for more ways to subvert the airwaves, so information is available on our website about how to suggest or request a local broadcast.
I'm Sashay Veneers, and you are up close. Cunning, intelligent, rich, stumpy. All words used to describe Charles Blake Charles II. Billionaire misfit and seven times acquitted naughty boy. Heir to his father's real estate fortune and all-around funny-looking pickle. Charles Blake Charles is once again on the run from the fibber. FBI, I know how to read, says fibber. I sat down with Mr. Charles at an undisclosed location in room 412 at the Marriott in Kansas City to hear his side of the story.
They won't film too close, will they, Sashay?
Of course not, Charles.
I don't want them to see into my eyes.
Good Lord! Those are your eyes? Are you sure? Because those are some zany gogglers you got.
I have been called puppetish.
Ooh, Muppet or Marionette?
Ventriloquist.
Would you say it's your spooky man-boy puppety look that has endeared you to so many juries.
People want me to be guilty. They look at me and all my money and all my strangeness and all the evidence, and they say, Charlie's a bad boy. Shh, Charlie. Put a lid on it, Charlie.
And your bowl cut. What's that all about?
Daddy used to put the bowl on my head.
Was your father a big influence on you?
Doesn't everyone love their father?
Doesn't they?
They doesn't. No, Charlie. They're listening, Charlie.
What's that?
Nothing.
Oh, please don't let me interrupt you in a monologue. I say let her rip!
Can we get a close-up now? I'm about to smile.
Charles Blake Charles's legal troubles go back nearly 40 years! Beginning in 1977 with the second murder of his third wife. The charges thrown out on a technicality. Charles was caught celebrating his release by dumping a mysterious garbage bag into Lake Charles, the quaint setting of his colonial second home. Charles, what is in that garbage bag at the bottom of Lake Charles?
Charles.
Yes, you.
No, Charles.
Your father.
Oh, my father's dog. My father wasn't named Charles.
But you're Charles II.
After the dog.
At the bottom of the lake?
Excuse me, I have to use the restroom. They know, Charlie. They know what you did, Charlie. Fed the dog a chicken bone, Charlie. You're a bad boy, Charlie. You're a very bad boy, Charlie.
With a bottomless supply of moolah and an army of high-priced lawyers, Mr. Charles has narrowly avoided 5 death row convictions. Defiant to the last, lead counsel Texas Giuseppe painted his client as a meek, ineffectual fop incapable of hurting a fly. His fast-talking shenanigans infuriated the Don every turn. D.A., are you talking crazy? Do you resent the portrait of you as a limp, brissy noodle?
Make no mistake about it. I could feed you a chicken bone and buy my way out of it if I wanted to.
American justice, I like it.
Excuse me, Sashay. I have to use the restroom. No, Charlie, not again. Your microphone's on, Charlie. Stop talking, Charlie. You're confessing again, Charlie. Charlie, you're stupid, Charlie.
After his 4th bathroom confession, I sent Charles back down to dig into the meaty center at the heart of the meaty center of the matter. Dancing with the Stars, good or bad experience?
Bedazzle was a beautiful partner, and I was stunned by her untimely demise.
Did it make you mad when she missed the ball change?
I don't get mad.
Oh, yeah? What do you get?
Everyone makes mistakes, Charlie.
That's right. She made a biggie, didn't she?
Daddy said so, Charlie.
Daddy said she was bad.
Charlie's bad.
Charlie's bad. Did Daddy say that?
Charlie dances too pretty, Charlie.
Too pretty, Charlie smash.
Charlie smashed. Bedazzle made him smash. Bedazzle
made him do what?
Dance too pretty.
Dances too pretty?
Like the chicken bones.
Chicken
Charlie.
Bones!
Down the hall like Daddy.
Down the
went
hall.
To Mommy with the chicken
Daddy
bones.
Daddy brought the chicken bones.
Daddy brought the chicken
Daddy
bones.
Daddy and Charlie
down
does the same.
Gonna tell.
Oh,
down
chicken
hall,
again.
Charlie, down
bring
the
it down the hall. That's right.
Bring
keep coming.
The chicken
foot, my
bones,
foot. Step, step. That's right. Shouldn't tell.
Let it out. Charlie's gonna
burp
tell.
It out.
Charlie's
burp it out.
Burp it. Charlie fed Bedazzle the chicken bones and put her in the bottom of Lake Charlie with Charlie.
I'm Sashay Veneers, and I made Jolly Crack. We'll be right back with Dr. Ben Carson. You did it, Sashay. You really nailed him. Just like you nailed them all. Microphones, what? On.
I think it's about time for another song from the band, fellas.
Some of these days, you're gonna miss me, baby. Some of these days, you're gonna feel so lonely. You're gonna miss my loving. You're gonna miss my kissing. You're gonna miss me, baby, when you've gone away. You're gonna miss me lonely, just for me only. Cause you know, darling, you've had your way. So, baby, if you ever leave me, you're gonna miss me, lover, honey, darling, one of these days. lonely, just for me only. Cause you know, darling, you've had your way. So, baby, if you ever leave me, you're gonna miss me, lover, honey, darling. One of these days, you're gonna miss me, baby. One of these days, you're gonna miss me, darling. One of these days.
You can find links and information about our guest tonight by visiting our website, AmericanParlorSongbook.com. Let's have another one from Bill Barrett, Phil Goff, Eric Holden, and Marcus Watkins. The telephone used to be a commitment. Before buttons were invented sometime in the mid-80s, your finger would bleed if you had to dial a zero. A single wrong number choice could set you back 5 minutes. You had to drag that sharp plastic wheel all the way around until smack against that metal hook on the other side. I suspect it's how a prank phone call became known as a crank phone call. The heavy breather was big back then. There was a whole segment of the male population that enjoyed a good pant over the phone. Something about who is this, hello, click, must have really done it for them. You know, I can't even think of the last time I heard of a raincoated flasher either. It was a special kind of weirdo in the 1970s. On his way into the world, he was issued a raincoat, a mustache, and a van. But still, you know, they seemed to get in less trouble back then. A single Merv could flash an entire city without so much as a summons, and he could heavy breathe into your phone all he wanted. There was no call display. It was just a big beige brick stuck to the kitchen wall. The cops, they'd have to get a warrant and do a trace, and well, they wouldn't bother with all that for a few kids asking for Prince Albert in a can, right? Right? Shy sister Nikki would blush at the slightest breeze, and half the fun of doing anything was making her laugh. Sister Melissa was pretty tough, though. Played the drums, jean jacket, feathered bangs, 1982 Supreme. And if they would have let kids ride motorcycles, I suspect she would have rode one. And I would have been happy in the sidecar. Remember the sidecar? The sidecar went extinct with the era, too. You know, gone the way of the 8-track cassette and the cigarette-smoking chimpanzee. Toronto was clean Chicago. If you took a hose to Chi-town and turned the guns into hockey sticks and said sorry a lot more, well, you had Toronto. I doubt it was any safer back then, but we pretty much had free rein over the place. Saturday subway cars were sardine thick with too many kids doing just about whatever they pleased. Save for the occasional narrow escape from one of those trench coaters, it was pretty much smooth sailing down to the Imperial Six to watch Goonies for the 17th time. We ran amok in the streets and under them, too. hopping into the tracks and exploring between the stations and the tunnels. Backs pressed against the pitch-black wall in absolute terror as an old red cleaning car blasted past, wind in your face, climbing out with soot on your face to explain to Mom. Back in the neighborhood at night for hide-and-go-seek and nicky-nicky nine doors and egg tosses, and when the folks were on a date night, the crank phone calls. I was the voice man in bad accents, workers stuck in a well, little old ladies with hilarious toilet problems, and Nikki was a giggler, and Melissa was a frightener. Look behind you. We'd rifle through the foot-thick gray paper of the white pages and mine for funny names. How you could have survived the dial-tone prank call era with a name like Randy Bungler or Richard Small, I'll never know. Summertime was the greatest. Late night laughs, every day a sleepover, banana seat bikes to the corner store for chips and popsicles, and reenact Martin Short on the coffee table stage and dares to streak the backyard, and then, after midnight, phone harassment. For one reason or another, we really honed in on this one poor family around the corner. Is your refrigerator running? It's 11 o'clock. Do you know where your children are? I'm calling from the bank. Your account is overdrawn. Make sure to turn the bathroom light on at night when you go. I put a plunger in the bowl. The laughter was worth any ounce of the chance of getting caught. And why would we get caught? They had better things to do. Oh, one evening after supper, an authoritarian rap on the stick-on faux stained glass front door window. We peek around the curtain. Oh, I'll make a break for it. It's the polite Canadian police. All three of us barreled up the stairs, tumbling leapfrog one over the other, and then quietly into the bedroom, into the vent in the corner. The vent, where you could hear clearly down to the dining room table, where we'd listened to our parents so many times before with their weird friends debating my dinner with Andre. Tonight, it wasn't a friendly cultural chat. No, it was the fuzz. And we were cooked. The family around the corner, it seems, was finally fed up. They drove their Volvo all the way to the precinct, and they lodged a formal complaint. And they added a little padding to turn up the heat, too. I heard it through the ducts. Threats of bodily harm. Enough to bring charges. Charges? Bodily harm? Oh, bodily harm. The plunger in the toilet. I guess that would harm a body. I could see it. 10 rough years of hard labor. Prison tattoos. The life of a wandering felon forever after. All for a few cranks and a plunger in the toilet. Cooked! Listen. So sorry we had to disturb you, eh? But if you could just have the kids call and say sorry, eh? I'm sure this whole sorry mess would be all cleared up, eh? Oh, sweet, 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 gentle Canadian mercy. Oh, but Dad, he'll do the murdering for them. This could do it. We could be disowned. Up he comes, skipping steps through the narrow staircase and into the door in his jean shorts and his Dobie Gillis goatee and his comb forward, tapping his foot and then leading us to the phone. And we crank the dial all the way around to the number that we had memorized. Hello, is your refrigerator? Sorry. And one by one, sorry. Sorry, Nikki, three shades redder blushing, and Melissa, half sorry. Sorry, click. We waited for Dad's sentencing. Probably no dessert, and maybe no more TV, and maybe even permanent dish duty. He taps his foot again, crosses his arm, and then he launches into it. All right, dummies, it takes 10 minutes for a trace, so remember to hang up after 9. And no plungers. And then he spent the next hour with us, making weird pharmacy requests, letting Prince Albert out of the can, and wrong numbers from Russia, and all of us busting a gut and off scot-free, just like those trench coaters. A little freer back then. Yeah, it was a little freer back then. And you know what? I don't think a little mischief would hurt anybody these days either.
With the moon, shooting jacks with the stars, when the world was ours.
APS is on Twitter @ParlorSongbook, And you can find information about the program on our website, AmericanParlorSongbook.com. Now, we love hearing from our listeners, and there's a contact link there on the page. Sometimes I'll even answer your letters in a song on the air. So if you need advice, or it's your grandmother's 100th birthday, or you just plain want to tell us how much you hate the program, just write J.P. Houston Sings in the subject line, and you never know, you just might get a response on the air. Before we head back to the Tudor House Theater, let's listen to something funny from our old friend, comedian Stephen Benequist.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Small Things Considerable. I'm Robert Beagle. Violent crime in America is at its lowest level in years. It's 20% lower than it was 12 years ago, and 12% lower than it was 20 years ago. These statistics are true in cities and in the country, and in all areas of the country. North, South, East, and West, every region is the best, and that's a good thing for humans. But how safe is it outside of the hominid world? What is the state of crime among our four-legged friends? Of course, I'm not talking about horses or cats. Never cats. I'm talking about dogs. Oh, dogs. To answer this question, we spoke with the leading authority on dog crime earlier today, O'Gruff the Crime Hound. We spoke with him through an interpreter. O'Gruff the Crime Hound, it's a pleasure to speak with you, sir.
It's a pleasure to be here with you, Robert.
You are known by many of our listeners for your cartoon TV appearances, urging youngsters to take a bite out of crime. I understand you mean that quite literally.
Yes, well, Robert, keeping law amongst canines is a bit different than it is with you humans. When a dog policeman such as myself detains a criminal, he has no gun, no taser, and no nightstick. All I got is me chompers. And all I can do is bite that criminal with everything I got.
I see. And are you required to read the Miranda rights before attacking?
Oh, certainly. The law is the law.
O'Gruff, tell us about crime in the canine world.
Well, Robert, crime amongst dogs falls mainly into three categories. The first is crime perpetrated by dogs and whose victims are dogs. We call this dog-on-dog, or just dog-dog.
Dog-dog?
Dog-dog. Dog-dog crimes include toy theft, food theft, trespassing.
I wasn't aware dogs owned property. Explain dog trespassing for us.
Dogs don't own property in a human sense, but we do mark our territory, exercising our First Amendment rights, as it were. Your law defines money as a form of speech. We define urine as such.
I see. So that's the first category, dog-dog. What's the second?
The second category, Robert, is dog-human crime. Dog perpetrator, human victim. Examples of this are getting on couches we're not supposed to, being on beaches we're not supposed to, excessive barking, garbage knockovers, piddling, and leg violation.
You mean like you're doing to me right now?
Exactly right.
I see. And the third category of dog crime?
The third category of dog crime is human dog. Human perpetrator, dog victim. For instance, leashes, baths, humiliating items of clothing such as costumes and booties. We dogs are nudists and we want to run free.
I know how you feel.
But, as James Brown said, this is a man's world, not a dog's. But I'd like to add, it wouldn't be nothing.
Nothing!
Without a beagle or a pug.
I think we're getting a little off topic, O'Gruff.
What I mean to say, Robert, is it is a man's world and we dogs understand that, dimly, or at least if we don't understand it, we accept that free food and patting comes at a price. And that said, could you skip the vegan food? Our teeth are called canines for a reason, right? And that said, I'd like to address a most serious violation, Robert.
Oh?
This is the matter of dog owners calling themselves our mums. It's simply not factual. We dogs have real mums, and to call yourself our mums is frankly a slap in their beloved hairy face. Additionally, it paints the human using this terminology as suspect, emotionally stunted or underdeveloped. Basically, a toddler with a driver's license. Who wants that on the control end of a leash? Not me. So no dog mummy, please.
And I presume that goes for doggy daddies out there, too.
Yes. Yes, Robert. Yes.
And now the big question, O'Gruff. What is the state of dog crime today? Is it better or worse than when you started the job?
To be honest, Robert, Dog crime doesn't change much from year to year. We canines are simple creatures, and Lord knows we'll never stop toppling over rubbish bins or chomping up slippers. But the fact that human-dog development has brought our two species over the tens of thousands of years to our current interdependent state is a wonder and a miracle. When you really think of it, one predatory species, humans, keeping and sustaining a subordinate predator, dogs, in a 21st century lifestyle where neither does any actual hunting, it's a little weird. But there you are.
And there we are indeed, and there we'll have to leave it. My thanks to you for being here, Ogruff the Crime Hound. Shake? And now back to Small Things Considerable. I'm Robert Beagle.
We're happy to have our old friend back on the program, here for the first time with her father, ladies and gentlemen, Chickster and April Havishankman.
I ask you this, ladies and gentlemen. Is it a crime to want to be loved? To want to be liked? To want to be wanted? Is it a crime to want to be known? To want to be seen? To want to be a star? If it's a crime, ladies and gentlemen, then it is Hollywood who is guilty. Guilty for being the home to the stars and the starry-eyed. But what, I ask, is this spell that the stars have upon us that make us love them so, that make us want to become one of them? Ladies and gentlemen, I give you our star reporter, Hava Hopper, with the inside scoop. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Hava Hopper signing in. Just last week, a young star-struck scarlet was found dead on the steps of the Hollywood Palace, better known by its pen name, MGM. Clutched in her hand was a blood-drenched letter declaring, "You made me love you, I didn't want to do it, I didn't want to do it," and so on, and so on, and so on. She then went on to list a name of Hollywood's most beloved stars of today's picture, of who today she held responsible for her young demise. I am here live in Lake Arrowhead, California, also known as the Hollywood Hideaway, nestled in the San Bernardino Mountains, where one could find solitude, serenity, and, of course, stars. Yes, stars. The very stars that our young star-struck Scarlet would have died to meet. Oh, wait a minute, she already did. Oh, look, look who's there. Why, it's Mr. Alfred Hitchcock. Mr. Hitchcock.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and Hedda Hopper. Why, it's a pleasure to be here. Of course, it's a pleasure for me to be anywhere.
Oh, look who's over there in the far left corner. Why, oh, if it isn't Mr. Cary Grant chatting up Katharine Hepburn, I don't believe this.
Judy, 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 what's a girl like you doing in a place like this? Why, you look ravishing, sweetheart.
For the last time, I told you my name's not Judy, it's Katharine, Katharine. Why not even get a ride, Grant? Kate, Kate.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to interrupt, but, oh, look. Oh, I don't believe this. Why, it's Jimmy Durante chatting up Carmen Miranda. Now, that's an unlikely match.
Carmen Miranda! Yes, sirree! What's that fruitcake on your head?
You know something, Jimmy? I've been living in Hollywood for 7 years and a half. You know something? You know, bananas are my business. Yeah, you know, the you do the ink and the do, and the ink and the ink and do, and I do the tick a tick a do.
All I can say is ink a tick a do.
Or maybe I should try it, you know? Try it a little bit, you know, South American style. You know, I said, an ink a ink a do, an ink a ink a do, an ink a ink a ink a ink a ink a do. A chick a bat and jam, a boy a jam, a bat, a
good night, Hedda. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
Oh, I'm right here, Jimmy. Oh, and you'll have to excuse me, but it's Mr. Gable, Mr. Clark Gable, speaking to a young Judy Garland.
Now, see here, baby. You're a nice-looking girl.
Oh, gee, Mr. Gable. Well, I'm sure you have a lot of girls that feel the same way about you, but I just have to tell you about the first time I saw you in the pictures and it happened one night, and, well, I knew right then and there you were the nicest fella in the pictures. I guess it's because you made me love you.
I didn't want to do it.
I didn't want to do it. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I bid you adieu. Good luck and good night. Hedda Hopper signing off. Good night.
One more time for the Bastards of Belleville.
That's our show. Thanks for listening to American Parlor Songbook. Thanks for joining us here at the Tudor House Theater in Lake Arrowhead. We'll return next week with a fun show. Be sure to tune in. APS is produced by the American Parlor Company, presented by KVCR, and available on PRX. Now, you can find information about the program by visiting our website. Oh, Martha, I am not coming to your rescue.
Oh, I don't need saving, baby. I'm on top of the world.
Oh, I just want to sleep in peace.
But it's almost sunrise.
What, will you turn into a pumpkin or something?
No, I just need you to tell me what happened.
It's fairly predictable by now, Martha. You, refusing to accept your Hollywood glory days are behind you, went on a rampage of excess and destruction.
Yes, but how much destruction? I need to know.
Plenty.
No, exactly how much. Oh,
why do we have to relive it?
Because I'm going for my record.
Your record?
I made a bet with Randall.
Oh, no. What did that charlatan put you up to this time?
Beat my record of 10 legal infractions by sunrise.
Or?
He gets my Oscar.
But you don't have an Oscar.
The one I stole from Faye Dunaway.
And if you win?
A cool million? $1
Oh, come on. That phony couldn't rub two nickels together.
His eye isn't that lazy.
No, I mean he doesn't have the funds.
Oh, believe me. We have plenty of fun.
Never mind.
Will you just tell me about last night?
All right. Count one. Contributing to the delinquency of a minor. You started off the evening by indecently exposing yourself to the mayor's son.
He's almost 18, but I'll take it.
Count two was concurrent, as you were dangling from an expensive chandelier at the time.
Fun ain't a crime.
No, but the view from below was.
You can't be charged for the same crime twice.
Unless there is a live television camera below.
Ooh, FCC violation.
You came in quick for the trifecta.
Oh, no, Wendell, it's called a hat trick in rule breaker circles.
Wait, there are circles?
Actually, it's more of a secret society.
Well, I'm sure your little society will be pleased with the ensuing destruction of property.
Don't skimp on the reckless endangerment. That's four.
Five is where it really got interesting. Your clothes flying off, bits of chandelier in the air, like a Scorsese mob hit.
Toque, do you want to play games, huh?
That's De Palma. Slow motion, arms out, like an old lady Tommy gun down the center of those two long tables, launching hors d'oeuvres left and right, taking out guests.
Say hello to my little friends.
You certainly didn't make any of those.
Friends? Oh, please, everyone loves me.
I'm afraid this time, Martha, you were in the lion's den.
Oh, what, some stuffy ball?
No, the policeman's ball.
Randall, oh, that louse!
I told you he wasn't out for your best interest.
That tubby pansy lured me into a bloody quagmire.
Isn't that the point, Martha, to break as many laws as you can?
Without getting caught, Wendell. I'm not crazy.
We're splitting hairs on the definition, I think.
Was I pinched?
I suspect the comptroller probably copped a field.
No, you dope by the piggies.
Martha, don't be so hard on yourself. You're not that flabby.
Was I pinched by the police?
You breezed to that ballroom like some kind of criminal specter, always just out of sight. It was quite amazing, really.
I taught Kaiser Sose everything he knows.
And not for the lack of your so-called friends trying.
Oh, I will kill him.
He nearly got your number before infraction number five.
Six, Wendell. I popped a pill before we even got there.
All right, six. You crawling underneath the tables, grabbing where you shouldn't grab, and tying those shoelaces together, him flipping the tables over, just a beat too late as you scurried on to the next.
Like a fox.
Or a rat.
He's the rat.
Touché.
No French, Wendell.
Are you sure? I was about to get to the pièce de résistance. Numero set.
Well, it better be a big one, or I owe that rat an Oscar.
I'd say it was about 20 feet big. Now, I don't know where you found that can of spray paint, but you sure know how to use it.
I'm Banksy.
Well, that's not what you wrote across the front of the mayor's house.
Anarchy?
Well, I'll give you a hint. It ends in the police, and I can't say the first word.
Straight out of Compton.
Beverly Hills, but who's counting?
I am, and that's only seven, Wendell.
You made easy work of 8, 9, and 10 on the way home. Drunk driving a stolen vehicle.
8 and 9, good.
Not with any help from that Randall, the little worm, attempted to call the police from the car. If it weren't for me throwing his phone out the window,
ooh,
we would've...
Ooh, good conspiring.
Oh, I was just trying to get home to bed.
And then?
And then you made it an even 10 when you parked on top of that fire hydrant at the end of the block.
I'll start polishing up the statue.
I think you'll be hanging on to Mr. Oscar a little longer, dear.
But, Wendell, that's only 10. I didn't beat December 31st, 1979.
Was that Cabell?
Studio 54.
Ah, of course, the night you had Charles Nelson Reilly in stitches.
Literally.
Well, you'll be happy to know that you did beat that record, Martha, for all that Randall knows anyway.
Oh, I don't cheat, Wendell.
Oh, I think we can slip you by as an accomplice here.
What are you talking about?
Well, when that car came to a sudden stop, both you and your unsavory friend succumbed to the alcohol and went out cold.
So?
So I carried you inside and put you on the couch.
The couch? Couldn't you have at least thrown me an expensive lawn ornament or something?
Even better, Martha. Kidnapping.
You're kidding.
Kidnapping.
Who?
Randall, our terrible hanger-on, is, as we speak, fast asleep on a bus to Albuquerque.
Albuquerque? Oh, that's cruel.
Yes, it is.
I like it, though.
I slipped back out and I shanghaied that little goon straight out of town. And as far as he's concerned, you put me up to it, didn't you?
Number 11, I did it!
I came to the conclusion that breaking the law was in your best interest for once.
Yours, too. $1 million, Wendell.
Dear, I don't think we'll ever see that money.
Maybe not, but oh, I would love to see the look on his face when he wakes up in Albuquerque.
There's nothing a fashionista hates more than turquoise adobe.
He'll be drowning in it.
He'll be stuck there for a while, too.
Why's that?
Well, it's hard to book a ticket without your wallet.
No, you didn't.
Oh, yes, I did.
Wendell! didn't know you had it in you. Well,
there's just something about that smug face of his and the way that he treats you.
Oh, Wendell, my hero.
In a black hat, maybe.
No, you're the good guy.
It does feel pretty good, I'll admit it.
You see, bending the rules a little keeps us free.
And it makes us tired.
Aw, my little criminals all tuck it out.
Can we please, Mom?
All right, dear, but not without my lullaby.
Ah, nothing like a gentle lullaby to wind down a good crime spree.
You know me too well.
Yes, I do.
Martha, the sun has bowed its head. Our friends have all gone home to bed. We burn the candle end to end. Remember what I've said time and time again. Every evening ends, but you don't need to fret. I'll hold you through the night. Sleep tight, my love. Good night.